Good morning. Our next session on networks and INETs and how to use shared services to achieve more with less with our economy today. We have three great speakers here who have wonderful stories to tell us on how we can achieve this. I'm Chris Giramillo. I'm with King County, Washington, a longtime member of NATOA. And also, King County is the home of a 300-site INET. So I have quite a good experience on INETs and how they're built and how they work. Our INET is mainly supported by Comcast and some with Broadstripe Cable. So I'm going to move right on, since we're kind of short on time today, actually. We've just got an hour to hear from these three speakers. So the first speaker I'd like to introduce to you is Tara Heiser from the city of Roseville, Minnesota. Tara's network manager of Metro INET. That includes 23 local government agencies in four twin cities of metropolitan area Minnesota. Four twin cities in metropolitan area counties, actually. He has some great ideas to share with you today, and he has quite a lot of experience in INET. So welcome, Tara Heiser.
I've got about 24 slides, and I think we're going to be taking about 15 minutes so per speaker. So I'm going to kind of go through the slides kind of at a rushed pace, because if anybody wants to see them after the fact, it's basically a lot of numbers, but really the numbers are equated to trying to give everybody kind of a picture of who we are and what we do in this collective group, which we call Metro INET. I'll explain a little bit more about what Metro INET is. Just to give you an understanding real quick, in terms of what I'll go through, I'll just quick give a little regional profile of what we have for fiber optic infrastructure in our area, and then a quick overview of Metro INET, both our purpose, what our group actually comprised of the network, what our infrastructure is, and I'll have a couple examples of some of the services that we currently share. In terms of the Comcast or fiber optic infrastructure, we too a good portion that is actually Comcast provided fiber optics as part of our local franchise agreement. Typically, what Comcast had provided was six strands of fiber from a city hall to their head end, with the primary purpose for the distribution of our video for our council meetings. They provided additional fiber capacity for other purposes. So the most part, all the cities in our franchise groups, they have this fiber, and there are some schools that were provided fiber as well, and that was really based on if they had any video issues because of their distance from the head end. In our area, we have five Comcast head end facilities. The list real quick, the one up in Ham Lake, which is in Oak County, Shoreview, Roseville, and White Bear Lake are all in Ramsey County. And the Oakdale, and it kind of gives you kind of an idea of how the institutional network on the Comcast side is put together. We also have a provider in the Metro Access Communications. They're a primary provider to school districts, constructed fiber optic cables under E-rate proposals. So most of those installations are 6 to 12 strands of fiber per school building going back to their district center. And currently, Access Communications has fiber installed to 7 of 8 school districts in the northeast Twin Cities metro area. They have about 50 or so school buildings are actually connected on that access network. Then we also have municipal fiber network. These are projects that have been developed by both North St. Paul and the City of Roseville over the last 4 or 5 years. We've extended our municipal fiber network into adjacent community areas. And both Roseville and North St. Paul are E-rate service providers. We provide some services to both school districts and to the Ramsey County Library System. So what I'm going to actually quickly go through is how we've leveraged both the institutional network, municipal fiber, and to a certain degree to Access Communications through leased dark fiber to construct what we have. What we call today is Metro INET. And really all Metro INET is, it's a collective group of joint powers agreements. It's not an agency, it's not a board. It's a collective of agreements which they all serve to share with cost share services in and amongst the cities that are participating in the group. The first agreement was actually executed back in 1998 between the city of Roseville and Moundsey for the sole purpose of sharing internet access and a single exchange mail server. Back then, we actually started that when we were using our coaxial INET. And like I said, the agreements provide for the cost sharing of staff, equipment, and services in a single administrative network. And that's another definition of when we talk about Metro INET. In Metro INET, the cities actually belong in that group. We all share a single network infrastructure, meaning a single network security boundary. So a user in the city of Forest Lake can travel 30 miles across the metro, sit down at any computer in another member city's facility, and actually log on to the network and gain access to their network resources. Again, our purpose is really to share technology, resources, and services, and the emphasis is actually on sharing services. Also to increase the level of available technology to municipal staff and to promote other cost-sharing services, and I'll go over each of those in detail. To kind of keep it together, we actually created a Metro INET management group, which consists of our city administrators, our finance directors, and IT staff. We typically meet every quarter to discuss budgets, applications, and deliverable services. Right now, actually, in the collective network, which is the single security, we actually have 19 municipal agencies in that group. So within these 19 cities, all of these city employees actually have the single log-on process to gain access to the resources. And to give you kind of an idea, within these 19 cities, we have 11 fire departments, 8 police departments. Another one of our members is the Centennial Fire District up in Anoka. They provide fire services to 3 cities up there, and the Ramsey Washington Metro Watershed District is also in our group. We serve about 244,000 residents. To kind of give you an idea of the scope of that, Roseville and Maplewood are the 2 largest cities in the group. We have roughly 33 to 35,000 residents, all the way down to cities like Gem Lake, which has about 400 residents. So within the group, I think one of the values that we found is that on a collective level, we can provide the same level of services to a certain extent as the 2 next comparable cities in Minnesota, which would be Minneapolis and St. Paul. Collectively, we are the 3rd largest municipal network in the state of Minnesota. And in our INET right now, combination of the city and Comcast, we have 98 facilities currently connected on the network with 1,520 Active Directory logon users. And out of that, nearly a half of them are firefighters, police officers, and we also extend email and network access to council and commission members. So nearly half are actually your public safety and council commissions. The rest are your general municipal staff, which are your finance departments, building departments, public works. This is basically a map of the metro, so all the agencies that are highlighted in green, those are actually the agencies within Metro INET. There's a listing of all the cities. So when you actually look at our connected network and our fiber connectivity between facilities, we comprise probably about half to maybe 2/3 of the northeast metro area. East Bethel is up in Anoka County. They're the furthest north. Roseville is in near the center of the map. So right now we have 84 facilities on gigabit fiber. 33 of those were at the Comcast institutional network. 51 are now municipal fiber connected buildings. And we have 14 facilities left on less than 10 meg connections, where typically are going to be your DSL VPN over cable modem. But as noted, on all those facilities there, none of those facilities actually have any more than 6 employees at any of those facilities. Just some other numbers. We operate over 200 switches on the network. We operate a single Cisco wireless LAN infrastructure. One of the things that we operate on that is we have a guest network, which is called City Guest. So you could actually go to Lauderdale City Hall, and as a resident or a member of the public, you can log on to that City Guest network. If you go up to Forest Lake, which is 20 some miles northeast, you'll also see a City Guest network, which is the same managed wireless infrastructure. And within that, we run private secured networks for police, fire, and municipal staff. We are currently running about 120 servers. We've recently virtualized most of those. Just in terms of the power savings, we've reduced the power in our data center by about 4 kVA, which based on our power rates is anywhere from $20,000 to $22,000 per year. And we run basically a single storage infrastructure for the entire group, and we're running about 150 terabytes currently on our SAN. So what do we do? Well, first and foremost, it's managed services. We actually manage the network for the group of the cities. So if you're like Lauderdale and you have 5 employees, out of those 5 employees, could you really have a network anybody? So previously they would have community volunteers or a paid by the time and material consultant would come in and take care of their network infrastructure. We have a unified exchange email, so you know it's always surprising to new employees when they come in, they actually hit the company directory. Although they see all these cities on there and all these employees, and they always wonder, do we really have that many people working for us? Well, technically we do work for each other. We share a lot of services. But more importantly, it's a single unified communication system. And even if we had a problem with the internet in general, we could simply disconnect from the internet and still communicate between that number of police and fire departments and municipal staff without any connectivity to the internet. We also run unified voice in most of the facilities. And hosted virtual servers, like Ed mentioned. We talked about the secured facility Wi-Fi. We do centralized record management system. All of our help desk and computer support is all centralized. And well, the many, many more you always add on there because I could have went on. Really what our purpose was is to afford high-tech services. Even Roseville with 33,000 residents and the size of staff we have would have been hard, would have been pressed to afford more than 2 to 3 full-time IT people. As a collective group, we operate with about 10 full-time IT people, 8 in Roseville and 2 at the city of Maplewood to provide these services. And again, it's affording these services because we basically leverage the economies of scale associated with that. And more importantly, it's to provide services to the small member cities. And a quick community profile again was City of Lauderdale. They're only 0.4 square miles. 2,300 residents, they have 5 full-time employees with 2 of those in public works. Their budget for 2011 was about $1.1 million with half of that going to public safety. So when you look at that, there's not that much left to operate the rest of the city. They have all the same services as a City of Roseville department or City of Maplewood department. They have a full-time managed network. They have on-call IT support staff. They have Cisco telephony. They have gigabit connectivity to the internet. We have a gigabit connection for our internet. They pay $5,985 per year. Because what they account for less than 1% of our total network costs, including staff, and it's based on the number of users and computers that they have. So they pay basically the same share, if you will, that a larger city pays. Quickly, IP telephony. This was installed back in 2004. It was a joint effort between the City of Roseville and the North Suburban Access Corporation, or our cable commission. At the time, we installed what was about 175 phones in 9 facilities. We have distributed call managers. Some were placed over at the community access studios. The other ones were installed at Roseville. At the time, we spent $127,000. But the key part was when we installed this call manager system, the software itself supported up to 7,500 phones. So we started with 175. So we could start adding more phones without increasing the amount of back-end equipment that we have. And really what it was is to reduce telco charges. First-year loan, we dropped about $55,000, mainly some of the concept or the value of IP telephony is we could use our existing LAN infrastructure to get phone service out to buildings that were previously covered with leased tie lines. Provided distributed architecture failover. Like I said, we distribute our call manager, our E911 servers, amongst a number of buildings, so we have failover. Capability was tested almost immediately after we put in our phone system when a road construction project cut 600 pair copper cable coming into Roseville City Hall. But our INET connection actually fed out a different end, so we were able to maintain our phone service for the 2 days while they repaired the copper line. Today we have 21 connected organizations which share a single phone system. We're all direct dial agency to agency. Within that, we actually have 3 community access studios. In addition to NSCC, we have the Ram Washington Cable Group and the South Washington County. It's allowed them to do direct dial station-to-station dialing from their community studio head end into the control rooms at the city halls that participate on that. And we're running about 3,200 extensions now, which allows us to extend direct inward dial to voicemail for our community groups like Roseville Big Band or Historical Society. And not only just Roseville, but every city has those kind of groups as well. Overall cost savings, just the elimination of the redundant hardware is about $60,000 a year in capital reduction offsets that we don't have if everybody's to purchase their own equipment. We've reduced our telephone charges by about $102,000 a year because we share PRIs. And we've reduced our outside contract support by about $40,000 because we actually support all of this in-house with Roseville staff. Again, really, some of the things that have come about from that is, as a group, we always ask, what do we need? It's no longer, what do I need? And a quick example is, last year, the police departments were provided a grant to be able to put arbitrator units there, in-car police cameras inside their squad cars. The grant gave you the camera system for the car. Didn't give you any money for the back-end server. Didn't give you any money for the storage. It did not give you any money for the installation. Well, since we're a single network install, we only needed one back-end server installed, and that was $5,000. It would have normally cost $25,000, so we saved about $20,000, and to me, $20,000 is a lot of money for agencies our size. Plus, we basically manage all the video on a single back-end system, because they call it arbitrator for reason. It is stored digital evidence, and that evidence is actually stored by basically a third party. We're not law enforcement, so we can actually store their video and taxes that video. It actually has to come through a non-law enforcement department, if you will. Some other examples of things that have come about since we basically became a consolidated merged network. Roseville shares shares engineering services with two other cities. Regardless of where their engineers are at, they have access to their data, regardless of what building they're working in. Same thing now, Maplewood now manages the North St. Paul Community Center, because the network is present in both facilities. North St. Paul is providing dark fiber services now to the state of Minnesota through additional agreements. North St. Paul basically spent the money to install that, and they can lease dark fiber out to the state of Minnesota. St. Anthony has always provided police services to Falcon Heights and Lauderdale. That's not uncommon in a lot of cities, but what's different now is police officers, when they are stationed at either Lauderdale or Falcon Heights, have access to their records. Where up until just a handful of years ago, they did not. And Roseville provides managed network connectivity services to the Roseville School District. Real briefly, it's, you know, some of the, you know, go through some of the lessons learned. And, you know, one of the things, we started with Moundsview in 1998. Maplewood, the agreement we have with them, really came to fruition within like the last 3 or 4 months. So it took almost 13 years to engage the next largest suburban community in Ramsey County. But what it's done is actually made our group stronger, because in effect their IT staff are still Maplewood employees, but they're going to contribute to the collective by processing or taking care of task orders for Roseville. And that's why I said anybody can be a provider of services. Doesn't matter, it's a piece of paper. If you're a provider, and anybody can be a recipient of services. Because really what it comes down to is, in our group of cities, everybody has something to offer to the other cities. It's just a matter of matching those needs and managing the application, and that's where our group steps in, that if two cities want to share services, we can help manage those services. And that's really what I have for now.
Our next speaker, Ira Levy, is the Chief Performance Officer and Chief Information Officer for Howard County Government. Not only does he articulate the tech vision for Howard County Government, but he has been a leader in improving technology for many local organizations, including the Jewish community. And Ira, a friend of NATOA, has always leaves his door open for us, and we thank you for that. Thank you, Ira. All right, Ira Levy.
Thank you. Okay, I'm going to hop right in here and try to move things along. So I'm going to go over a couple different pieces we have going on from a Central Maryland standpoint, Howard County in Maryland, some of the large initiatives that we're working on, and nonprofits as well. So just to kind of kick this off, we were a BTOP recipient. Howard County was a subrecipient. We are working on this large infrastructure project. It's called the One Maryland Broadband Network. It puts in 1,000 miles across the state. It connects all the different jurisdictions and counties in the state together. Over 1,000 anchor institutions will be connected. There are already 1,000-plus anchor institutions connected to previous networks. Could be INET, could be just private public networks have been put in place. So it brings them all together so that you have possibly a multi-thousand anchor institution network, sharing everything from obviously libraries to hospitals to fire stations and government facilities and education and so on. So to give you a feel for how it kind of looks on a map, obviously it's all over the place. The area that Howard County focuses on is central Maryland, the area in the middle where you see a whole lot of red. When this began, what we did was put together a consortium of 10 different jurisdictions. These are the jurisdictions that are up there to give you a sense. You can see Howard County landlocked right in the middle. So what we did was reached out to everybody and said, let's go after this together as a group, put together one application, and do it as partners. I'd like to pretend like it was completely altruistic that we reached out to everybody. But part of the reality was Howard County, we knew that we would not receive funds necessarily if we went after it alone. And we knew that the story we could tell and the things we could achieve as a group would be much greater. So in when we went after the grant, obviously we had a goal, and we would evaluate success as actually receiving the funds. Once we received the funds, we had to reevaluate what our success was going to be, or goal. At that point, it was really defined based off of the federal government's definition, which was, we're giving you this amount of money, you need to spend it in a certain amount of time, you need to connect the certain anchor institutions you said you would connect, you need to put in the certain number of fiber miles that you said you would. So if you share that goal and success with the community, with the region, it really doesn't resonate with them. So a community really evaluates success differently. Not so much on the fiber miles, even though that's exciting to probably a tenth of us sitting in this room. So what we started to look at is really what the community is going to evaluate success. When we started that process, we really started with, as a government, what do we evaluate success? And that's actually different. So when we started looking at how do we lower costs, we drop lease lines as an example. We start to share resources with one another. I'll get into some specific examples of the things that we're doing in those areas. We start looking at interoperable public safety communications, whether it's 700 megahertz communication, radio communication, it's voice over IP opportunities, and so on. So we started to look at all of these different things, and we said, okay, now we have what government really thinks of as success. But again, if you really get out into the community, they're really looking at how they either interact with one another, they're looking at how they interact with the government and the services that are being offered to them, and how we are actually offering increased services or greater access to those services. So we started going through that plan. We are not done that plan. It's an evolutionary process that we're going through. But this has become our true focus now, because at the end of the day, when this network is in place, August 31st, 2013, turned up, we really can't be sitting in a situation where we say, okay, now we have it, and who's going to come, and who's going to put something on here, and why is anyone actually going to care? So our focus has really changed. As far as changing that focus of the resource sharing and the collaboration and all of that, we got caught up in a discussion, and a lot of it had to do with return on investment. And it's not that we don't believe in the concept of return on investment. I have an MBA in finance. I kind of get it. But at the same time, when it comes to community success and these infrastructure projects and the things that are going on, you don't want to be held captive to just ROI on the things that you're doing, the services and the applications and so on. So we started to kind of look at, is it ROI that we should be talking about with all of the pieces that go in place, or is it a sustainable model? And we really feel that it's a sustainable model is the goal and what we're really trying to achieve. So it's not about us making money or is our payback in 2.5 years or 3 years. It's long term. Do we have something that's not going to be ripped out and somebody else is going to come in and replace it and something else is going to be there instead? And a lot of that gets into the concepts of, if you look at the other infrastructure that goes into place, road systems, not many people are talking about ripping them out anytime soon. If you're looking at water and sewer systems that are in place, again, if someone was elected and they said they're running on the grounds of ripping out the water and sewer infrastructure in a location, they might not go too far. So we really are looking to make our network and our infrastructure sticky, so sticky that you can't rip it out. Obviously, that happens through all of the different open access potential that's there. We believe the sustainable model is really based on open access, interconnection to other networks. So there's open access, but then there's interconnection to make sure that others can come along and offer services. It's not just government to government offering services on that particular network. We'll get into some examples of that too in a second. Even wireless opportunities, a lot of times I'm asked, you know, you're obviously into this fiber thing. How do you feel about wireless? Well, they all work together. They are synergistic at the end of the day. So you have to figure out, again, from your model, what kind of backhaul you need, what kind of infrastructure you need, and then where does the wireless fit on top so that you can expand and do things that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And then coordinating new strategies and so on. So we knew as a government we're good at certain things and we're not as good in other areas. But when we started kind of then diving a little deeper and saying, what are the current resource sharing opportunities we have today that we can do that we have started? So voice over IP is an example. I'm going to kind of hop around here a little bit, and I'm going to get into details over the ERP one because that's the one we're working on right now. Voice over IP is one example. The newest big one that's coming around for us is TV over IP services, not voice over IP. We see this after the digital transition and the boxes that are required in all the schools. Those are generally unbudgeted items that took place. And what we're seeing from a scalability standpoint is that by creating one head end with TV over IP, we're able to actually scale it out to a region and push TV services to smart boards and all of the rest of the technology that's out there. Starting to eliminate certain costs. But the beauty is that many of these things really scale wonderfully. So when you're looking at, instead of just hitting one jurisdiction, 10 or 20 or so, it just keeps getting better. Data center consolidation, we started this in different ways. We started to partner with a data center in Baltimore. So others can put their racks there and start to come together. Howard County, after a consolidation process we went through, we have thousands of square feet that are wide open for anybody that wanted to put something there. And we've started that process. The other piece is looking at the technology itself. So if you look at some of the storage devices that are out there now, they're set up for multi-tenant type operations. So you're able to actually partition areas of storage out, allocate it to another jurisdiction, and the security is there. They can manage it remotely. And, you know, so just as an example, NetApp is one of those companies that has that type of device. So when we look at infrastructure and we're looking at technology, we're looking at items that can accommodate that sort of approach. So voice over IP, obviously, as was talked about previously, is ripe for this. ERP, our financial systems, I'm going to talk about an example of that. SAP is the one that we use. Then we really are trying to also push for new licensing models. And not to pick on Cisco necessarily, but what happens is a lot of times with the infrastructure we're putting in place, the way the model works for support and maintenance is either based off of device. They're not enterprise-type licenses that can then scale across an entire jurisdiction or multiple jurisdictions. So we're really trying to push the change in the marketplace around those items. Video translation services, I'll talk about that in a minute. And then crowdsourcing really is what we see as kind of this next piece as we bring one another together. How are we sharing our ideas? How are we bringing our developers together as we work on applications and so on to move us forward? So here's the bottom line with this slide is there's only about 50 million questions that popped up, and with every solution there's a problem. So it just kind of goes on and on as to all of the different issues. The key to the issues, I would have to say, is not that to find a way not to have them, but to figure out how you have some sort of governance model to the network or to whatever infrastructure you're putting in place so that it doesn't get, when you come up with an opportunity or an idea, it doesn't get bogged down in, okay, it's got to go to the governance group that meets every quarter, and then they're going to have to figure out not only, you know, who's going to maintain it, but who's going to oil it, who's going to change his litter, and so on and so on. So those really are the issues that stop innovation and stop us from moving forward. So you have to figure out how to operationally move that aside to some other entity. So, the other entity. What we did is started to move forward on creating a nonprofit called the Center for Broadband Innovation. Its motto is thinking by doing, which speaks again to that, are you going to get hung up completely on ROI, or sometimes you're going to come up with an idea, try it out, and then you're going to learn from it as you move forward. So, the Center for Broadband Innovation is trying to take up where as governments, we tend to have our issues, which sometimes has to do with innovation, sometimes really has to do with brokering the other services and applications that are out there and getting them presented on the network, right? So as a government, I might have my own application service. I'm okay with presenting it. Maybe it's voice over IP. Maybe it's something else. But there are so many other applications and services out there. As a government, I'm not going to be a great shepherd necessarily bringing them in, brokering all the relationships, and making sure all of them are presented on the network. Prime example of this is Maryland Public Television in Maryland wanted to offer all kinds of high-definition video content onto the network to all of the different schools and entities that are going to be connected. It sits in Baltimore County, basically the head end. But Baltimore County is not saying, I'm the one that wants to be responsible for making sure they're hooked up, making sure that everything is working all the time, and so on. So you really need that other entity that's going to help broker that relationship and make sure you have that third party connected onto the network, presenting services, whether they're free or for fee, so that the network can grow. Again, back to that stickiness, back to making sure there are things offered on the network that make it so you can never rip it out. So the center kind of is focused on that relationship building. I'm going to hop around here. Planning and education. We sit, particularly now that the census data is out, all these planning and zoning meetings about 10-year build structures and all that kind of stuff in all these different areas and regions. The issue really is not around roads because they've got that figured out, and they've got figured out how many multi-dwelling units and how many commercial units and all that kind of stuff they want and where they want it, and they need water and sewer and so on. So when we raise our hand and say, how about communication infrastructure, usually someone says, I'm sure someone else will take care of that. So maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but unless you're really setting your goals appropriately, unless you know what you want to achieve, then you don't know whether or not they're going to take care of it, and maybe they will, maybe they won't. So the innovation has started. So these are some of the relationships that CBI are going to help kind of foster. Language Access Networks is the name of the company. What they do is they offer a product called MARTI. It's video translation services, and it's a unit no bigger than this. It's one button touch screen, and when you touch the screen, a video operator shows up, and they do video translation services. 38 different languages. They are all certified in the medical field. So hospitals were all interested in signing up for the service, getting one of those units, not only for intake, but discharge was probably one of the biggest areas that they were mostly interested in. So health departments and so on, and they're all interested in this product. The problem is when they show up, they say, reasonable rates, give you the product, no problem, but you're going to need a $1,000 a month MPLS circuit on top of it. So what we've done is, through the center, started to work with language access networks so that we can have one interconnection point or two onto the overall network, get the service delivered to all the entities that are interested in using it. It allows from a private sector, that company to really grow, spread its wings, and it allows all of the other participating anchor institutions to shed costs. SAP, as an example of a product that we are pushing and presenting onto the network, there's all kinds of challenges with getting into this area. But in Howard County, we implemented SAP. There are other jurisdictions looking at leveraging our implementation. We're more than happy to do it. There's all kinds of different things that go along with it. What we've tried to do is create a new model where a jurisdiction that's interested in an ERP solution puts out an RFP. Then what happens is Howard County, as a government, actually bids on it and goes through the competitive process. So it's actually coming along. It's you know, something very interesting. Again, once it gets to a certain stage, we need the center to help kind of foster the billing and making sure that the service is offered and so on. The next piece we've been working on, too, has been an energy management portal. So we've actually created the energy management portal. There are sub-meters at all of our different county buildings. There's about 70 or so out there. They all feed back every 15 minutes into an energy portal. You graph it. You can lay building on top of building. You can see if there's anomalies that are taking place. It gives you a carbon footprint for that area based off of gas and so on and different formulas. So what we're able to do with this product now that we have it is just have it scale out across the entire region because of the network. So we'll be going live with that in the next couple weeks. You know, two other areas I just wanted to mention is CAD-to-CAD integration, which is another one we see in Howard County is interested in it, but we're not doing it yet. We see it in Virginia where it's taking place, where computer-aided dispatch, which is your 911 center information, is being shared. The information is being shared between two jurisdictions. The reason they're doing that is because when you have a call that comes in and it's across your jurisdiction, you know, you might need resources from across your border. You want to see what resources are available that can be deployed to that particular event. In Howard County, we border more jurisdictions than any other in the state. We border six. So because of that, it's very important to know what's across the border and may be available for an event or an issue that arises. Because of concepts like this, and we talked about interoperability around radio and CAD-to-CAD, it creates new challenges on top of this network. Because it's not just best effort anymore, and what if it goes down, or what if we have a maintenance issue, you know, on Wednesday nights. You really need to design it so that you have true resilience built in. And you have to understand what your service level is around that and what's necessary. You also need to know about in-service upgrades and whether or not you can actually upgrade your network without taking it down, if you need to add channels or lambdas so that you can expand the capacity of it over time, and how all of that works. And as we talked about all this video that's going in place and emergency operations centers leveraging that, whether or not you have point-to-multipoint opportunities and things like that so that you're not seeing your bandwidth degraded because you're not pushing your data appropriately across it. So those are kind of the different concepts we wrestle with. It's an evolutionary process. We love every minute of it. but it's exhausting by the end of the day.
Our last speaker, Graham Richard, is experienced. He's an Indiana state senator. He's been an Indiana state senator, an entrepreneur, and a former mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana. And interesting, he's also an author. And interestingly enough, when he was he's been dubbed as America's broadband mayor when he was mayor of Fort Wayne, Indiana. So I have a feeling he has a lot of good stories to tell us and some good advice. Graham Richard, thanks.
Thank you very much. I appreciated Lev's comments to open up our comments. And Ken, thank you for your leadership of NTOA. And we're looking forward to your successor. We see that you're going to be a busy woman, Jen. Thank you. How many of you here are in communities that have a gigabit of fiber connectivity to major community anchor institutions? How many right now? How many of you are in communities that have fiber to the home? As a fairly widespread community built. Okay. I want to pick up on Lev's comments, and he was talking about what is community and how does community work. And very briefly, many in this room have heard some of the story of the Fort Wayne desire to be the most wired and inspired city of our size in the country. When I won election, again, in 1999, by 76 votes, a lawsuit, and a recount. So with that mandate, we decided to be very, very bold. And one of the things we did was to call together community groups to ask what could we do in that recession, not the big recession. But in our part of the country, we are used to those recessions because Fort Wayne's midway between Indianapolis and Detroit, a city of 252,000, a metro area of 500. And we have lost tremendous job and economic income as a result of the restructuring of the manufacturing economy. So our challenge was, how do we become a competitive community? What can we do? And out of these discussions, it was interesting. The small business entrepreneurs were the ones that first said, Mayor, if we don't get better broadband, we're not going to be able to stay in Fort Wayne. We're talking about 2000. So we began to listen and see that need and said, what if we could choose as a goal to be a community who uses broadband to improve the services and the lives of all of us. Better broadband, better lives, we call it our Wired and Inspired initiative. We started by public safety because we had warring factions among the public safety interoperability, and of course 9/11 followed on shortly after this. And we put out an RFP, and a local, not a major vendor, won the wireless bid to put wireless communication systems up on all of our fire stations, our water towers, and that began to build relationships between the city and the county. Second thing we did was to call together the four school superintendents, the local Indiana-Purdue campus, which now has 14,000 students, our libraries, and other anchor institutions, say, what if we could get all of us connected by a gigabit of fiber and begin to deliver, as we are today, all kinds of virtual educational opportunities in a county that has a very large geographical footprint. So by 2005, we had created a not-for-profit entity, we raised the money, Comcast won the bid, and we built out a gigabit of fiber connectivity, and then began to launch the kinds of use of that. So today you can get Japanese, Chinese, and Arabic language education for college course credit delivered to any of the 55,000 students now. Typically, that's offered only for the high school students, so it's really the, but the system's available to all. And then we also said, well, what if we could encourage the investment of additional fiber optic, fiber to the home infrastructure investment? And at that time, Verizon bought General Telephone. General Telephone's based in Fort Wayne for the Midwest region, and so we wooed Ivan Seidenberg as part of our beg, borrow, buy, build philosophy. And we were able to get $150 million of the only Midwestern Fios fiber build in the country by promising to create, Ira, an innovation center for broadband, a not-for-profit, a seed capital fund. We hosted a national, 500 people came to Fort Wayne in 07 for the Killer Applications Conference for High-Speed Broadband, and Ray Kurzweil talked about the importance of broadband, and Andrus Duraney talked about smart houses and smart cities and how you could build those using high-speed broadband, and we connected a 90-year-old home with fiber optics and Cat 5 all through it and demonstrated how we could use applications for the single mom in that home to make a difference. We also set about saying, what if everybody in the community who had no health insurance could use broadband and could have their own electronic medical record, which we were able to accomplish, get the competing hospital systems and healthcare clinics all to agree, and by 2005, we had about 90,000 electronic medical records, and we were delivering services remotely, like the diagnosis for individuals who had retinitis as a potential type 2 diabetic condition, and we could do that remotely with the busy retinal surgeons from one of our local clinics, and then that spread to the rest of the emergency rooms in the clinics. I want to shift gears. Today, I think we have both an infrastructure challenge. I was speaking with a representative of Corning about the fiber build, the multi-billion dollar fiber build in Australia that by 2020 will connect all but a few remote homes, and those will get 4, or perhaps at that time, 5G wireless. A friend from mine just came back from Korea talking about the incredibly fast speeds and low cost of a gigabit of service, up and down. Hong Kong, $28 a month, a gig, up and down. This is a competitiveness issue for our country. And other countries are treating it like we treated the interstate highway system, as a public investment good. That's not going to happen. So we have to come up with new models. And Mike Smelter's here, and Mike's got a model that he's using in Champaign-Urbana. I think a model is to start thinking about how, from a local level, we can build new community-based partnerships to be a gigabit nation. In Indiana today, there are almost 70 communities that have built out fiber to the home. Two of those, Scott Bowles was here with Spectrum Engineering, and they've done a magnificent job in Auburn, Indiana, through the Municipal Electric Utility, building a publicly owned fiber in addition to their water and their sewer and electric power. Of the 2,500 smaller community, city-based municipal electric power companies, I'm told many of those, Jim Baller has the numbers, have less than 10,000 residents. We are in a situation today, and I'll give you another example. Indiana is a good way to look at that, where there are 100 Indiana cities that are mandated to separate their sanitary and stormwater sewers. In Fort Wayne, it took us 8 years of negotiation. It's going to cost us $240 million. Indianapolis settled for $1.2 billion. Baltimore's got a big, very large multi-billion-dollar number they've got to meet. Why in not just looking at the dig once, let's do finance once. Let's talk about what we call smart city bonds, municipal water bonds, municipal utility and sewer bonds, municipal public bonds, but partnering with the private sector, independent, for-profit operators or rural electric cooperatives, individuals, corporations, entities that have experience operating fiber-to-the-home systems. If we can bring down the capital expenditure cost by even 40% by using this public-private partnership and accessing municipal debt financing, partnering with potential private operators, we have an opportunity to create the smart sewers, the smart water systems, and the smart gigabit community infrastructure that can then get us the results. Last point. Don Means knows this. He's working with the Shelby Coalition, and there are many others that are focused. The BTOP and BIP dollars that came out. We have, according to the National Broadband Plan, 100 million Americans that are not connected to the Internet. So it's great that we are focusing in these 4 days on becoming gigabit communities. But what do we do as the digital divide becomes a digital chasm? It's great that we have people lined up to use at all of our branch libraries in Allen County that gigabit system of connectivity because they don't have connection at their home. we know that wireless communication systems, the 4G systems, are helping to begin to get individuals who've not been connected to the internet connected. The recent Pew study shows, particularly among Hispanic Americans, we're seeing one of the fastest adoptions of smartphone technologies as a technology adoption rate of any that we've ever seen in the country. That's great. But we've still got a long way to go. So one of the things that I don't see, and we're proposing with TechNet to launch, hopefully by the first of the year, an initiative called the TechNet Broadband Innovation Platform, a place where we can take those great ideas, Ira, that are coming from your whole broadband center and many other places around the country. We can share what works, have those initiatives evaluated, and be able to have some sense of how do we get more people connected who are disconnected. I call this the convene, connect, collaborate mandate. And so as we look at a gigabit community, if we're not at the same time finding out what's working and sharing those best practices all across the country. So I would open up, Jamanta Natoa, an opportunity to partner with TechNet as we discuss this innovation platform that will combine social media, it will combine analytics, it will combine prizes and awards for the community-based programs that do the best to connect those who are not connected. Our challenge then is, as I can summarize, by quoting Peter Drucker, the danger in the times of turbulence is not the turbulence, and we're certainly in turbulent times. We all know our budgets are on the downslide and will be for many years to come. So he says, it's the danger in times of turbulence is not the turbulence, it's to act with yesterday's logic. If we're going to get to that gigabit nation and being a gigabit series of communities, it's going to take new ways of thinking about leveraging investment, leveraging talent, leveraging technology, and getting people engaged in our communities in a way they have not been engaged before. That's our challenge. Thank you.
I think we have about 5 minutes for questions. Does anyone have any questions for any of our speakers? I think there's a microphone right behind you, actually.
Well, this question is for Mr. Heiser. You're on it. That's certainly impressive with 19 regions all in sharing your on it. It's something that we've really looked at doing in rural Western North Carolina for a long time. But getting the cats herded and getting them to all agree on those agreements is sort of the barrier to progress. So I wondered about your joint powers agreement. Do the municipalities who are involved actually own fiber and share fiber? Is it like an IRU? Is there a capacity agreement? I mean, what guarantees each one of the municipalities that when they need access to the bandwidth, it will be there?
Yeah, it really varies. For some of the municipalities that are large, we'll use an example like with North St. Paul and the construction of their fiber optic network. The city of Oakdale, which is their adjacent community, they wanted to be provided a 20-year IRU on basically a certain number of fiber strands that, you know, connect Oakdale fire stations. But when you look at our group, most of them are really small cities. And they, even if they owned, you know, the fiber to connect their facilities, they typically don't have the staff to provide any services over that. So they elect basically to utilize the services that that Roseville provides. And then on top of that, when you look at a lot of the other connectivity to get from city to city, that is still Comcast-provided institutional network fiber, which, you know, we can utilize for municipal purposes and nothing other than that.
How long did it take you to put together all of your 19 communities in your INET?
In the presentation, I showed that the first one was in 1998 with the city of Moundsview, and the most recent one was with the city of Maplewood. So it's taken about 13 years. But I think the, you know, when you talk about the, you know, the political part behind it is that, you know, these were all cities that had nobody. They didn't have any IT staff whatsoever and really no, you know, funds to provide that. Mm-hmm. So when the city councils look at neighboring communities such as Roseville, because we're one of the largest cities in the Ramsey County after St. Paul and Maplewood, is that they were more than open to that. And I still run into council members, and you know, they'll say, we really don't know what we've done if, you know, Roseville wasn't taking care of us. And I always say, well, I don't know what Roseville would do without partners either, because quite honestly, Roseville did not have an IT department until that first joint powers agreement with the city of Maplewood. So Roseville has never had its own IT department. We've always been a collective with partners.
Well, it's a great accomplishment.
Thank you. Yes.
Hi, I had a question for Ira Levy. It regards the MARTI, the medical video translation. Are they doing a sign language interpretation too, where a sign language professional can mediate a conversation between a doctor and a hearing impaired patient?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They are.
All right. Great.
We are too. We have that same program.
One more question. Oh, Joanne.
What are the startup costs for that kind of a program if you've already got fiber infrastructure?
Can't hear you.
Startup costs for MARTI?
Or something similar to
right.
that. Right. Is it staff time matter, or is there a lot of hardware?
The MARTI program specifically really had no startup costs. They just needed to make sure that there was some connectivity to the device. So it's kind of an all-inclusive device that gets plugged in. And it really is their whole point was a one-touch sort of system. So one button, touch it, it connects, and then kind of goes from there. So.
Is that with your system too, Graham?
We don't have the MARTI system per se. We have a collaborative of human service agencies that deal with the blind, the disabled, and hearing impaired. And our translation program actually connects from Fort Wayne to a translator in Indianapolis who can then help call a call center, for instance, in Utah to help a person who cannot hear to be able to sign and get their computer repaired. So the video component, the video translation enhancement component is particularly valuable for individuals who have hearing impairment. And that's the fastest growing cohort of disabling conditions in the country today. And so that's why we chose to focus on that particular. The language translation is not the MARTI system. We have another language translation system through our police department, and I don't know the actual name of that.
Very good. Well, for anyone who wants to contact these speakers, there's information in our program, or you can work through me. So thank you very much, and thanks to our great speakers with a great panel. Thank you.